Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with the budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Chris White's Doors, which is composed of shorter films directed by Duggan O'Neill, Jeff Desham, and Saman Kesh, who have mostly done music videos, TV movies, and other shorts before coming together to create the movie Doors. So in Doors, there are three shorts. The first short is called Lockdown, directed by Jeff Desham, where we see the doors first arrive from the perspective of some students who are in a classroom with their phones locked up. In the second short, directed by Saman Kesh, called Knockers, we follow three people as they enter one of the doors and go through some psychological trials within this house in the doors. The final short, called Lamage, is directed by Duggan O'Neill, where we follow Jamal, who makes contact with the door and is able to talk to it until people kind of become afraid and everything falls apart. Between the shorts, we hear news footage, mostly from a DJ, until finally we get a Zoom meeting between the DJ and a scientist. Chris White is credited as the creator of this movie, and I think we're going to try to look at it from his perspective and then use evidence from the three shorts to evaluate this as a Keep Making Movies movie like we do. And I think what Chris White was trying to do was create a few of the different feelings during the pandemic. So in lockdown, you had the beginning of the pandemic where it's like, oh, what do we do? Or should I leave the house? Should I go food shopping? I don't know. Knockers, where you're kind of navigating the pandemic world, right? So this is before the vaccine. You can go places, but you got to stay 6 feet. You're wearing masks. Everything's different. Maybe your favorite bakery still hasn't opened up yet. And then finally, Lamage. And this is my weakest one here. But maybe it represents dealing with people who didn't really believe in the pandemic or thought it was a hoax. So they're quick to dismiss COVID-19. So they were just pressuring you to do things. You know, I don't know. That's kind of a weird. But what did you think, Tom? What did you think the goals of the creator were?
I think that kind of works. I agree with you. I don't think it works for the Lamage one, because the person who's like, stay away, is the villain, which would be inconsistent, right, with that. But I think it does. That kind of works with the first two, especially since the first one's called Lockdown.
Right.
on the nose. I got the impression the goals of the creators were to do something similar to 2001 A Space Odyssey, where you have a superior intelligence that doesn't appear as a type of intelligence we can recognize, who comes and wants in itself to anthologize the human experience, that it's basically taking in everything it can and then seemingly editing it or improving it or fixing it, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. So they kept saying they were archiving, right? That was step one.
They do say that, and they say refresh.
Refresh. And I didn't know if that was, hey, we're looking at your history, and then we're going to make a better version of you. You're going to be refreshed.
Yeah, and it ends with everything falling apart, like satellites falling out of the sky. Is that correct?
I believe so. Lamage, the third short, Lamage, we follow Jamal, who has a door, makes a little machine, he can talk to them. Introduces it to his previous girlfriend, but the previous girlfriend's boyfriend's there, and he calls the cops, and then everything goes awry, except the door kind of defends itself, and then it ends. So I don't know exactly what we're supposed to take from that.
Yeah, I know. I would say that it, and back to the what I think the goals of the creators are, and I think it's similar to 2001, and I think in both cases it doesn't work, and I think I have a theory as to why. I think it is, and this is actually also true about Annihilation. If you've seen that movie or read that trilogy, the movie isn't very good, but the trilogy is worth your time.
Oh, I like that movie, Tom. Yeah, I watched it.
Oh, did you? I wasn't as big a fan of it, but I think that the book trilogy works in the same way, and it's about an encounter with something called the sublime. The sublime is this kind of overwhelming sensation or feeling or encounter that sort of brings you out of yourself. It's more than you, right? It overwhelms you. It's like being at the bottom of Niagara Falls and looking up at something that is so immense, you cannot comprehend it, right? Like infinity would be a sort of mathematical sublime. This is in aesthetics, this is contrasted with the beautiful. The beautiful is something that's delicate, appealing, nice to look at. And you could be really sucked in by the beautiful, but it isn't greater than your capacity to imagine. And I think that both 2001 and this film, and I think really the Southern Border trilogy, I think it's called, that Annihilation appears in, is about encounters with that which is so great you cannot comprehend it. And the problem with that in a movie, as they're doing it with the kind of science fiction framework, is that ultimately we want to know what the hell is going on. And so the movie is trying to simultaneously give you answers. In 2001, it's the answer is it puts Dave into a zoo and then rebirths him as a space baby.
Spoilers for 2001 Space Odyssey, audience. But yeah, it's that might be the ending, right? That's like
yeah, I know. It's ambiguous. So the problem is they're trying to give an explanation while remaining ambiguous. And I think this movie is also suggesting certain answers or explanations, but you know, it's again kind of remaining ambiguous. You don't exactly know why they're there, though they indicate they're archiving us, which involves millions of people being killed and millions more are missing, which is a great, great line. And so I think that's why it kind of falls apart. When you see encounters with the sublime in sort of religious texts, you see this all the time, right? Where you encounter like God. This is the mystic's journey. If you read mystical literature and whatever religion you like, it's an encounter with the sublime. It's an encounter that's so much greater than you that you're sort of brought out of your physical person, or your physical person is brought into this sort of transcendence that it can't fully grasp. I mean, in Catholic theology, it's contrasted with sort of rationalism. You know, we see this religion as having kind of a rational side in rational literature and mystical side in mystical literature. And that kind of works because you sort of accept the ineffability of God. You just sort of accept it. And so what you can gain from this encounter with the sublime is that experience, or that kind of being overwhelmed. But here, the filmmakers kind of want us to figure out what's going on. They do this thing, which I find kind of infuriating, where you almost get the sense of, it's up to you to interpret it. What do you think it means? And that's very different from, well, I don't know what the meaning of God is or gods are or whatever, but I know this experience, and this experience is meaningful. And if you look at these encounters as unlocking a door and getting an answer, opening an envelope and seeing the answer to the puzzle, as opposed to what really is the answer is the experience of moving beyond the physical, then you've kind of missed the point, I think. And I think these movies are asking us to open our own envelope, but that's not the point. The point isn't to open the envelope and see the answer. The point is to have the experience. And certain types of art and great art can do that. But the problem with these kind of science fiction premises is I think they're confusing these things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a good read, especially in lockdown. I think maybe we see it the most, where people are kind of drawn to the doors. So the certain people, and in the case of lockdown, it was Ash, kind of wanted to go in the door, mm-hmm. even though they weren't sure if they want to go in the door. And eventually they do go into the door, and actually they kick some other people into the door. And that very much so reminds me of I think, is what you're describing as sublime, right? It was too much. But in that one, we don't open the envelope. In lockdown, we don't. Is kind of contradicted in Knockers, where they go through and now we see what's in the door.
I don't know if it's contradicted in Knockers. Because they go into that realm, and the idea seems to be, if you get out in 12 minutes, you don't go insane.
Well, and so I had a little bit of a problem with that, right? scientifically minded people would not start with 15 minutes, right? They said the last group went in for 15 minutes and nobody came out. So now we're just doing 12. You usually start the other way around. You go in for 10 seconds and come back out. Then you go in for a minute and come back
out. Sure.
I
mean, and why are they using normal people, not scientists, right, or military people? Why does only one person have a gun? They couldn't afford a second gun. No, I mean, nothing makes any kind of logical sense.
But even the 12 minutes, like, why 12, right? But to try to draw it back to the sublime, when they go in, they are handling something that is more than they can handle, but it doesn't, I don't know if I would call it sublime. It's almost like sublime light, right? The one guy's going through room.
I think it fails, right? I think it fails to convey that kind of meaning.
Yep.
Because part of it is, and it might be adapting into a visual medium, is you have to see it.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's the thing with the Southern Reach trilogy, I think it's called, whatever, the trilogy in which Annihilation is the first book. There's something out there that's doing things, but you can't see it. And after a while, you realize it's like space itself, which you obviously, you can't visualize it in exactly the way the book is putting down. And that's why this fails, because eventually you have to see the thing. Right? You have to see what this world is like behind the doors. And so I think it just becomes that when the knockers, as they're called, which did make me laugh, but anyway, middle school humor aside, when you see the knockers go into this world, it's not that interesting, right? It's not that interesting. They see alternate universes where they're married, or alternate universes where there's alternate versions of them, which don't really seem to do anything. You get the sense that maybe they're being threatened, but
right,
what by what,
right?
What are they going to do to them? You know, and part of the threat is exacerbated by the fact that only one of them has a gun. More than one had a gun, it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, Tom, how do you think they did with the money they had?
How much money did they have?
Well, so that's an interesting question, audience. I don't know if you heard Tom. He said it a little quietly. Tom said, how much money did they have? To me, it felt like each short had about the same budget as an entire previous Keep Making movie. So they felt higher production quality than other movies we've done on this show. Obviously, we've done a mix of movies. But I feel like, I mean, The Doors looked really good, special effects-wise. I thought that looked...
I think it depends on how much money they have. It does look good. Even the cinematography looks good. The print looks good. The doors do look good. I saw some critics complaining about the look of the doors. I disagree. I do think they look good. They have this quality. They almost look like metallic filaments that are moving back and forth when you zoom into them.
Yep.
When the door is attempting to communicate. And the doors are different from each other too.
Mm-hmm.
You have the door in Limoges is covered in like roots or wood or something like that.
Yeah. It almost looked like it absorbed part of the forest that it was in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that had a different quality. The first door we see in Lockdown, we can't really see the borders of it.
Right.
It's in a hallway of a school and you don't see where the limits of it are. And so you're not really sure if you're looking at a door or if this is just a kind of floating portal.
It's really alien in a good way.
It's really alien, and you're really close to it. The camera spends a lot more time in Lockdown, very close to it, looking at the texture of the thing. And it looks good. It also communicates in Cambria type, I think, that appears.
So yeah, that's one spot, and we'll get here when we start talking about if they had more money. I did not like how the doors talked to Ash and then other people throughout, like... In Knockers, when it said "Know your Vince," and up on the screen in, like you're saying, Cambria font or whatever, "Know your Vince," that's one spot I don't think they did well with the money they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little, it's a little. I mean, it's certainly alien, but it comes off as a little. So even the font has a sort of, I don't know, pretension to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, it isn't like the subtitles, which would just be, you know.
Right, like a Arial. Kind of, or, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What did you think about that? How do you think they did with the money?
I thought they did really good. Again, my assumption is for each short, they had, you know, per minute more money than some of the other movies that we've done. I liked, Lockdown kept my attention the whole time. Like, I was always curious what's going to happen next. I did think it had a good pacing. Knockers, I really liked the way the houses felt. They felt like a dream. They felt like long, skinny houses that you're walking through. Obviously, particularly the one where he's going closet into room into closet into room into closet into room. That felt really good to me. But even the other ones, like, she's in a galley kitchen. So yeah, I definitely like the house in Knockers. But Knockers felt a little handheld camera-y.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
It's also not that, what they find is not that interesting. I mean, I know you have, like, the house has an otherworldly effect. They do different filters on the camera to make this happen. And there's one scene where there's a walk-through closet, and you walk through it, you end up in the same room over and over again with a bust of someone, and that bust becomes more and more deformed as they go along. You know, and then one room has Vince, and then Vince is the husband or the boyfriend of Becky. And in one room, there's three of them. And then it's like, who's the real Vince? You have to make a decision.
Know your Vince.
Yeah. And so that, and what do you get out of that? What comes to the surface from that experience?
It felt a little bit like in Game of Thrones, minor spoiler for Game of Thrones, when Daenerys goes into that tower and she gets to experience what her life would have been like with Khal Drogo. So it's a little bit of like, hey, we want you to believe this is reality now, and it's slightly different than what you remember, but it might be a version that you like. We think you can get comfortable here, and then you won't want to leave in the 12 minutes when the thing tells you to leave. I don't know how well they did with that, but that was the idea I felt like I got out of.
They're trying to keep the people in there, and it's also clear they're trying to prevent things inside from coming out.
Right.
Because there's anything that tries to come out, you shoot. That's the deal. That's what they tell them at the beginning.
Which, does that include the knockers they're sending in? Like, when I heard that,
No.
That conflicts. Like, I was like, if they do come out, they're just going to shoot them? Why would they go in? But I guess you're saying anything else.
Anything else. Yeah, I think it's...
Got it.
So they might not have said that. But they don't say things very clearly in this movie. Even things they intend to be clear aren't exactly clear.
So then the final thing I want to bring up is the interstitials.
Mm-hmm.
Were rough. They were weird. They were unnecessary. That Zoom meeting at the end, I don't think should have been included at all.
There's
in the
a lot
movie.
Of exposition featuring. So should we tell them about what is the interstitial conceit?
Sure.
It's a podcast or radio show or both by a foul-mouthed man named Martin Midnight, who seems to be into, I don't know, conspiracy theories, maybe. It's not even that colorful, right? We don't even get that much detail, I don't think. And in between, we get the necessary information to understand what has happened in this world. So Lockdown is when this first happens. Knockers is the government's response to this. So this is sometime later. This follows your COVID hypothesis pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I think that works really well for the first two. And we could talk about why I think that doesn't work well for the third one, though that might be a problem with the filmmakers. But Martin Midnight comes in between and talks about how stupid the Knockers program is and blah, blah, blah. I found his profanity to be really off-putting. I found the whole character to be. And it ends with what I thought was a fourth movie. But you're telling me it isn't framed as a fourth movie, so it seems just to be the last of the interstitials.
Yeah.
With the conversation between someone who seems to be a scientist or a theologian or a PhD of some sort in a Zoom meeting with Martin, in which he explains that these things are something like God here to refresh the world. And it is painful. It is we don't like to talk about the quality of acting on this show very often, because it seems a little mean. I mean, these people probably aren't getting paid or barely getting paid. And they're probably barely getting directed. So, you know, keep that in mind. But the acting's pretty hard to watch. It's pretty hard to watch. It's not, it doesn't give you any kind of explanation as to what's going on. The big dramatic reveal at the end is that Martin Midnight is now going to be called to go into one of the doors, which involves him for some reason taking off his pants. We don't know why. But the last thing we see is him taking off his pants, and he's walking up the stairs with no pants to go into a door, I guess. And that's the big thing. We that's how we end on. We end on his butt. So it's really, really painful. It adds world building to the movie that is not necessary.
I agree.
And it's totally, completely different from everything else.
Yep. Yeah. It felt a little bit like an afterthought, like, oh, we have these shorts. I don't think we can just line them up. Let's do something to put in between.
Mm-hmm. Which is typical of anthology films. If you see the VHS series, the whole VHS series is a collection of, it's a horror film anthology. It's a collection of videotapes. So these kids find a bunch of videotapes. And then they put them in, and it's horrible. And then they cut back to the kids before they go to the next tape, and it usually ends with all the people who are watching the videotapes being killed by whoever, I don't know, something comes out of the videotapes or comes to get the videotapes, something like that. So it's a convention of the anthology movie thing, but it's completely unnecessary here.
Yeah, I think if you just had the shorts, that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think a budget would have helped, Tom?
Yeah, I think so, because it feels like a sort of spec reel, something like they're putting out there almost as a fishing lure to see if they could get money to make something more professional and longer. I think in that case you can expand and do more with the knocker sequence and actually get into what the hell these things are. You don't even know what they're doing, but you need to have some sort of climax, something it's moving towards. And I think you could add that with a little more money where they kind of reshape it. Actually, it probably could be longer, right? I think this is like a 2.5 hour. Yeah.
I think you could even tie all three shorts together. If you have the mom of one of the kids be the knocker, and the kid died, so she's kind of like, oh, I'm going to go be a knocker anyway. And then maybe the teacher could have been Jamal, right? You could have actually had all the characters kind of relate back to that lockdown one, and then you wouldn't have to necessarily tell it quite in order like this. You could have showed a little bit of the knockers, and then, yeah, I lost my kid, and then cut back to how she lost her kid, or, you know, Jamal said, oh, I used to be a teacher, and, you know.
Et cetera.
Yep. But I think you would have needed more budget for that. I think that's one of the spots. So, yeah, I also agree. I think a budget could help this movie a lot. Which is kind of rare on Keep Making Movies, right? Usually we're like, no, we like the charm. We like the... But here we're kind of saying, if they had the money, they could have expanded.
It does seem like they know how to point and shoot a camera. Right? These people know how to make a product of sorts. And a lot of other movies, it tends to be smart people who've read a lot and have a cool idea and want to kind of rush at that idea. And they really don't know how to set up a frame. They don't know how to direct actors. They don't know plot cohesion. They don't realize, like, the idea is really not the creative part of the process.
Or it's one piece, but the other pieces are maybe more important than...
They're more important. You know, it's why conventional movies can often work very well, right? Like, you know, you make the same movie over and over again. You could criticize that, but usually you can find at least some of them that are pretty good. I think in this instance, again, the idea is somewhat compelling, even though I think the movie Portals did it in 2019, so also an anthology movie.
I think that might be Chris White's.
Oh,
I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Okay. He likes doing this type of thing. And so they're not really following through with the idea, but they know how to make a movie. And I think the L'Image section is the sort of evidence of that. They know how to frame things. They know how to set up an interesting shot. It's lighted well. The plot doesn't really work.
No, that boyfriend, right from the first, once he opens his mouth, you're like, all right, this guy's just going to wreck everything and ruin everything.
He's going to wreck everything. He's also, that woman would not date that man.
And like, I'm going to trust you because he's your boyfriend now. Like, no, you're not, man. You're not going to just tell this guy about you have a pet door. Like, that's...
Yeah. And the cop shows up, and it also ruins your I think it doesn't, it ruins the
COVID-19,
the analogy to COVID, because at this point it's kind of like the if the door is the danger and the cop is trying to keep you from the danger, but the cop is also the villain, because the cop is clearly the villain in this piece,
right? Yep.
Then
yep,
you know, it's sort of, unless it's a criticism of the lockdown, I don't, you know, I mean, the idea of COVID-19, the analogy being a door, is really interesting. It's a danger that everybody's drawn to, right, going through the door. It's just what we get to L'Image, we see that the doors, you can communicate with them, and it can be okay.
Right. It's even the behavior positive. They're like friendly. Yeah.
Or maybe they're friendly, maybe they're neutral. They're just trying to, we're not really sure, capture and understand, and then refresh, as they say at the end, which results in missiles getting launched or something.
I'm not sure.
I don't remember, like something, like satellites fall out of the sky or something like that when it says refresh. And birds die, right? Birds are always falling out of the sky. For some reason. So yeah, it ends up kind of, we're not really sure what to make of the doors other than maybe they're potentially neutral, right? They're not trying to harm or help. They're just there to observe, and there you go. But that doesn't make sense, because why would they be refreshing the world?
Right.
They're doing, what does that mean?
Archiving. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So does it make the list? Is this on the official recommend? Is this a yes from you, Tom?
I'm going to say no. It was that, it was just Martin's butt ending on poor Martin's butt. I was like, I can't subject this to somebody else.
It's a yes for me, and here's why. I think it shows how shorts can be used together. I think it's well made, and I don't think any other movie on our list so far has been an anthology. And I think it's a keep making movie anthology. So it's a yes for me, just because it's different than a lot of the other ones we have done, but is in the same spirit.
I think it is in the same spirit, and it is different. I think you're right. I would say, if I'm putting it on the list as an exemplar of this genre, then it's yes.
Wow. We got a flip. All right. Double yes. Mm-hmm. Doors is on the list. Who would have expected it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think putting things on the list isn't a question of quality. It's a question of genre. That's how I'm going to look at it.
Yep. Yep. I agree. The keep making movie genre. We're going to add it to IMDb. Well, audience, it's official. Doors has made the list. So Chris White, keep making movies. I'm excited to go watch Portal. Sounds like you've already seen it, Tom. But maybe we'll bring that one on the show, and we'll pit Chris White versus Chris White here. Audience, what's your favorite movie by Chris White?
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is, and Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201- 1-800-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss The Platform from 2019. Stay tuned for our first impression of The Platform. Next week, we'll be discussing The Platform. Tom, how was your watch?
I actually had suggested this. One of my students had mentioned this and asked if I had seen it. I had not heard of the movie. And it seemed to fit the model of this podcast so perfectly, I brought it forward. And I expected to absolutely loathe this movie and every minute of it. And the entertainment of this podcast would be my loathing expressed. I will say, I think this was one of the better movies we watched on Keep Making Movies. I won't say I was a fan of this movie. I'm not. My first impression is not that this is an excellent, underrated, underwatched film that everybody should rush out and go see. For the most part, it's a pretty obvious movie, what they're doing and how they're doing it. And the tone is like wildly self-serious. However, they are, it's a little more complicated than I had anticipated. And it is, and it's worth watching. I will say the self-importance of the movie gets in the way of its allegorical function. And it can get a little annoying in that sense. It also gets very, very bloody. It's a very violent movie, and at times you don't really know why. Like there's a certain scene where a dog is killed, and it's kind of unclear as to why that happened, other than the world is a cruel place, and this is the type of thing that happens in the world. That type of thing gets kind of annoying, but clearly this is a movie made by skilled filmmakers who are trying to create a allegory that works in several different ways. It's not simply just the income inequality thing that is the most obvious part of the allegory. There are other elements to it that make it maybe a little more interesting than the average film we bring to this podcast. How about you, KJ? What do you think?
I had watched this movie 4 years ago. I had mentioned to somebody I watched Cube, the last movie we did in season one of Keep Making Movies, and they said, oh, you gotta watch The Platform. If you liked Cube, you're gonna love The Platform. I remembered it being kind of gory, like you're saying, Tom. There's a lot of blood, so warning on that, audience. And for Keep Making Movies, I've stayed away from the horror and gore. There's a lot of micro-budget films that focus on horror and gore, and they all feel to me like they're trying to one-up each other. Like, ooh, look how much gorier we got than the last one. So I've stayed away from that. But Tom, you said, hey, let's do The Platform. And I was like, all right, here we go. So when I watched it this time, I did, and audiences will make more sense when you're watching it, I did one level at a time. So I watched it like a TV show, one level, one level, one level. And I think it worked that way. So as you can sit down and watch the whole thing, or if you want to do one segment at a time, I think each segment is kind of its own little episode. As we say, there's lots of gore. It's pretty gross through and through. So heads up for that. And at the time of this recording, it's on Netflix. Go check it out.
Wow. Talking Studios,